Welcome to Toffee Blue View, your source for all things Everton. Smiling, happiness, 3 points. We are jolly. Yes, we are. I'm Jerry, Max Terrier here, and we're gonna talk about lots of stuff. But first, I have to address, if you're watching this, you'll notice maybe something weird about my face, weirder than usual. Swelling in my eyes, had a crazy bad reaction after a run yesterday. I had to go to the doctor. My eyes were swollen shut. I'll probably send an image of this to the editor so he can cut this in to show you how ridiculous. But that's my explanation for I would not get in a fight. I haven't been in a fight in weeks. You know, it's no, never. Never been in a fight. Come on. So anyway, so yeah, that's the explanation for me looking even more tiny-eyed than usual. So yeah, apologies for my elephant man syndrome I've got going on here. Yeah. Anyway, so my day yesterday, I had that happen, and then I went and watched a really good college soccer team lose to a bunch of shit houses. Everybody out there, Wake Forest soccer. If you watched the Wake Forest Akron game, Akron hacked them to pieces. Wake got screwed over with a late offsides call. It was awful. College soccer in America sucks because Wake's the only one that actually plays football and the rest are shithousing. It's terrible. I got it out. I've blabbed enough. I'm seriously, after watching Cardiff play Everton this past weekend and to see their tactics and to be like, that's how a team lines up if they know the other team's better. You know, that's what they do right there. Obviously, we'll get into that more later, but I'm a fireball right now. We're gonna have an entire segment about soccer in America. And I said soccer because it really that's what they call it here, whatever. But we're gonna have an American soccer segment sometime in the coming weeks to talk about why it sucks and what can be done and just the landscape. Because I do think things are getting better, but I don't think they've solved anything really yet. All right, enough of that. Gentlemen, thank you for allowing me to monologue. They're just kind of, yeah, it's appreciated. You got to get it out. We had been talking about it off camera. That's the other reason I didn't gab about it, is because they would have had to hear it again. So, gentlemen, let's, for the benefit of the podcast listeners and Terry, here are the segments that we'll be covering on this show. We're going to start by reacting to Cardiff and how we managed to eke out a win this weekend. Yeah, they packed it in, and we managed still to squeak one through. So yeah, 3 points. We'll talk about that. Next, we're going to talk about Sigurdsson's good form. I believe this got to me through the grapevine from Max to John. Maybe we need to talk about Sigurdsson and how he's just a big ball of ass kicking right now. So we're gonna do that. Then we're gonna talk about two recent transfer rumors, Gabigol and Tanguy Ndombele. Two very recent transfer rumors. We've had others, but we didn't want to do a whole segment on transfer rumors because it's not quite that season yet. Not quite there. We're so close, but not quite. But we're gonna talk about those two, and then we're gonna finish up with If You Know Your History, the Everton style quiz game that pits Terry against Max in a cage match of Everton wit and might. Yeah, this will be a penalty shootout style quiz. Not gonna be naming starters or people who played in the game. So yeah, these are usually hard. Hey. So let's begin and let's chit chat about Cardiff. Initial thoughts, Terry, how do you feel that one went down this weekend?
Hard end. You had to really dig the results out. I mean, I don't know what else you could really expect for Cardiff coming to Goodison. I mean, a lot of people, myself included, were expecting like a big victory, but that wasn't because we expected an open game per se. I think it was just people thought the goal was going to come a little bit earlier than it did. And if it had it done, maybe when Cardiff had to come out and we would have had a little bit more. A little bit more time, maybe to press to get more build up a bigger advantage. But yeah, it was encouraging in a way because we've seen the players in the team put some victories on the board in the last few in the last month or so with proper really nice football. They've really entertained. They've really, you know, added some of the goals against Brighton spring to mind, like the flow and counter attacks and so on. But this one showed a little bit more grit, a little bit more steel, where you're going to have to play against a team who don't want to play you. They're not going to give you a proper game. They're just going to try and spoil things. They're going to try and, you know, kick sand in your eyes. They're going to try and rough you up. And we matched up to it. So I was really encouraged because it shows that we can win ugly as well as win nice. Stats were pretty telling about the game went. 70, I think it was 71, 72% possession we had. Cardiff only had the one shot on goal, on targets rather. And yeah, ugly game, an ugly win, but they all count. It keeps the run going. We've got four home wins in a row now, and we're taking two clean sheets and two wins into the Merseyside derby next weekend. So you can't sniff at that.
With you on all that. Maxwell, what you got?
I'm absolutely delighted, to be honest. I knew it'd be tough because obviously, if you think about it, before that international break, Cardiff are probably coming into that game in half decent form. Obviously, they got that win against Brighton, and obviously could come make them come to go to some puffing the chests out a little bit. But you know, we didn't really give them much, did we? As Teddy said, 71-72% possession. They were really physical. They had to try and you know, kick shit out of us basically. Going forward, it was a weird one because we weren't clinical. That was one criticism I'd have, particularly of the two wide players, Bernard and Walcott. That they just, you think about when, I know, I'm sure we'll get onto him, but Andre Gomes put in an absolute masterclass performance in that midfield. You think about when he, you know, on a few occasions he made players look silly. But when he fired that ball across the box at Theo Walcott, and you're just thinking, you know, tap that home, and it kind of, you know, balloons off him. Chances like that where you're thinking, come on, you should be putting those to bed. However, you know, that's a big win with the Merseyside derby coming up this weekend. I mean, by however many, you take that all day long, and I'm sure the lads will be full of confidence now.
I got really annoyed watching the NBC Sports feed, whoever the color commentator was. Cardiff were pushing a little bit at the end, you know, on a corner, trying to get a goal. And he said, you know, if Cardiff scored here, I think they will have earned it. I don't really feel like Everton has done much to win this. And he was referring to the fact that he thought that their keeper hadn't had a lot to do. I think that's stupid. I genuinely think that he wasn't actually watching the game. I'm trying to figure out. He just said all these little nitpicky, like, things about Everton the entire time, talking shit about Richarlison for falling down when somebody comes through his back, which happened repeatedly. That's a thing now. Okay, people come through Richarlison's back because he doesn't quite have the strength that Cenk Tosun does. You know, so when people go through his back, he falls down, and it's not getting called often now. But just a lot of nitpicky things that annoyed me, and I feel like this is indicative of the way some people saw that game, where I think they weren't really thinking, okay, well, Everton played a strong game. Our dominance on the ball was evident. Okay, we had just a ridiculous amount of possession because the other team wasn't pressing; they didn't want it. They didn't want the ball, you know. They were playing for a draw, and as evidenced by their keeper getting yellow carded, getting cautioned in the first half for
First half.
time wasting.
That was incredible.
Are you kidding me? You know, so that is a squad that did not come in, and then you see Warnock getting annoyed that Sigurdsson's walking off the field at the end. I'm like, your keeper got carded for time wasting in the first half, man. I realize, you know, you're Tony Soprano's mom, but it doesn't always go your way. All right? I don't know. I think one of the things that I have had trouble with is judging performances against overly defensive, overly physical, unskilled teams that just want to steal a point. And Terry, you brought it up, getting an early goal. Getting a goal earlier so you can stretch them out. You know, make them have to go and try to, once you get that goal, all bets are off. They don't stack the middle as much, and it's just a whole different game then, you know. I actually was fine. I thought our performance was strong. We still look a little sloppy in terms of making sure that our passes oftentimes are just like a few feet off. I saw a lot of that in the game, especially around the box. But I think a big part of that is they were stacking it. They had more feet getting in the passing lanes. That's gonna happen, you know. I don't know. I was actually fine with the match. I didn't think we played poorly. I didn't. So,
no.
Plus 3 points. Hey, top six. Hey, you know.
Exactly.
Even
that's huge.
Yeah.
That was huge. That's worth talking about now. You know, I mean, I can't see it lasting for much longer, but let's see if Sky Sports credit us as being one of the big six. Now we're in there.
Oh, no. It's top five for them now. Didn't you see?
No, I seen a tweet the other day, it's top four again. back to 92, the early days of the Premier League, isn't it now? But, you know, obviously Manchester United dropping points, that was a huge bonus for us.
Nice.
I was half paying attention to the Arsenal-Bournemouth game, and I probably would have much preferred that to be a draw.
Me too.
But, you know, gives a bit of daylight between us and Bournemouth now as it is. But yeah, hopefully that carries on. I just want to highlight the midfield performance. Andre Gomes, Idrissa Gueye, Gylfi Sigurdsson, they were the best three players on the pitch for me. Absolutely dominant, and they made Cardiff players look quite silly at times, which it was very amusing. I thought there was the amount of time we kind of left the man for dead. We're showing a flair and a real confidence in our play now that if you can translate that to Anfield, take away the nerves and the kind of inferiority complex that we seem to have there, I think we can give them a really good game, because although they won 3-0 at Watford, they're not playing this ebb and flow and attacking football like they were last season.
Who was your man of the match, Max? And then we moved to Terry.
Gomez. It's the Andre Gomez show for me.
Gomez. It's got to be.
I literally wrote Gomez for me. Yeah, that's... Yeah. Terry, why? Why Gomez? What particularly stood out for you for him?
He was just mercurial. He was just everywhere. He ran the whole game. And obviously, because of the way they were set up, he found himself with loads of time and space to do his stuff. And I mean, just watch the highlights, some of the things. Even the stuff that doesn't make the highlights, like, you know, when he goes past players into the box and whips the ball across, as Max said. There's just some of the switching of the play he does and everything. He's a really, really good deep lying playmaker. And honestly, I think the first thing on the agenda for the second the transfer window opens is go and call Barcelona and just say, call about Andre Gomez and see where we end up, because him and Idrissa Gueye and Gylfi Sigurdsson look like a really strong, diverse trio who we can potentially look to build around. And to be honest, I think a big part of December is going to be crucial, because we're not going to be able to play all three of them in every single game. So that will really tell us what we can achieve this season, when see how we get on when we haven't got all three. Because with all three, especially with Gomez playing the way he is, I think we can give anyone a game, and hopefully we do on Saturday.
Mm. The thing about Gomez that never makes highlights... he really does a good job of covering in the back as well. When you see the opposition get a little break and you see him he doesn't come in with crunching tackles. That's not his game. He just kind of shepherds them to the side, you know, and just gradually eases them off the ball, muscles them off it's that grace. He's just a graceful player. We said it before, he glides around the pitch, even on defense.
That's one of the things that surprised me like the most that I've seen from him, is that when you get flair players and creative players from those leagues like La Liga, sometimes it's a bit hit or miss. Where what are they like physically? I mean, we saw from Holland, Davy Klaassen really struggled in that position, with the physicality, his footballing ability didn't even come into it because he couldn't cope physically. Whereas when Gomez started playing, and like people couldn't knock him off the ball, and he retained the ball really well, and you know he shields it, and you know he assists with the sort of battling aspect. I was really surprised by that because I knew we'd get a good technical player, but you just always wonder which way it's going to go with the physical side of it, because some players just don't take the Premier League, but he has. He doesn't look like he's ever played anywhere else.
It's almost as if he's got this bird's eye view when he gets the winning, you know, when he receives the ball to feet. It's like he's got, you know, a 360 degree kind of perception of what's around him. Like Terry said, his ability to, you know, that close control and the ability to shield and hold the ball up, know when to knock it on and move forward. It's absolutely fantastic. And if you look at what Dortmund have done with Paco Alcacer, you've got him on loan and already they've made it a permanent deal. I think we should definitely be looking to do that now, and I think it'd give the lads in the dressing room a real boost of confidence and a statement of intent of what we want to achieve.
Yeah, I'll be curious if we may try to make that move in January or if we're going to wait till the end of the year.
I can't see it happening in January because I think Barcelona are going to have a real stubborn stance on this one.
Agreed.
But the more he turns in performances like that, the more without a doubt he's going to be, you know, he's going to be making his way up the list of priorities in terms of who we're going to bring in.
Terry brought up a really good point, which is December. I think it was Terry. It was you, Terry, right? You were saying how we're not going to be able to start all these players, which is one of the reasons why you're starting to see us make moves for players where we already, you know, positions where we already have good players. We're actually trying to start building a squad, linked with Ndombele. We've got players to play those positions. But a good player like that, is no drop-off. You sub out Gomez, you put in Ndombele, that works. Not the same style players, very different, but equally effective. I'm excited about transfer windows, but you know, at this moment though, it's just cool to be excited about the next game. You know?
Yeah.
I'm not dreading this weekend. I'm just not, you know. I get you two possibly dreading it because you live where you live. I get it. That's a whole different world you live in, but I'm really excited. I don't know.
My kind of pressing concern is, because as I mentioned before, I wasn't too impressed with the wide players that started. If it wasn't the derby coming up on the weekend, I would have gone ahead and rolled with the front three that finished the game. And I'm still quite undecided on which selection I'd make, really, with it being the derby. Because I don't know. Obviously, the midfield doing as well as it is, you want to push that level of performance going forward, and you want the attacking players to turn in with goals as well. Luchman was absolutely fantastic when he came on. He was, you know, arguably he should have finished that chance that he had. And Tosin seemed, you know, fluid with his hold of play and his interlinking. I mean, I suppose good selection headaches ahead of that game, and with them having PSG midweek, hopefully it goes our way.
Yeah.
It should.
What do you think, Terry? Are you feeling okay?
No.
See,
I can't anymore. I just can't do it. Expect the worst, and you might be pleasantly surprised. But they're very good. And to, you know what, at this point, given that the way the last few years have gone, I will be happy to get back to when we play each other, we just do our stuff and then see what the result is. We've developed this complex over the last couple of years, even though we've not got a great record long term, but this last 5 or 6 years, we treat it like it's this cup final, and we change our formation and our personnel to accommodate, and we end up losing anyway. So I just want to go there. Here's what we're about. Here's what we can do. These are our players. Let's see how they do against your players. And don't treat it like this enormous game where, oh my God, you're playing the Liverpool. We've got a little bit stuck in that mentality. And last season, even though as bad as it was at times, I think we started to see a departure from that. And I think with this massive recycling of players we've been doing, not everyone has got that taint on them yet of this, like, oh, we don't beat Liverpool. Look at our first 11, only Coleman has really played Liverpool before for Everton or before last season. And Coleman himself has played very little against Liverpool, or just through circumstance over the past 7-8 years. He always seems to be injured or he misses the game through circumstance. So I just want to see, there shouldn't be any fear of Liverpool. We're not going to go down. We're not going to win the league. Just go for it. We've got players like Richarlison. We've got players like Bernard. We've got players like Gomez. These players haven't played against Liverpool for Everton, so they shouldn't go into this game going, oh, this again. The tide's got to turn eventually. We will beat them again at some point, and I just can't get excited until it happens. It needs to happen before I'll begin to believe again. Not before.
Yeah, I take the Chelsea result as very encouraging. That was the most recent game where we played someone that's supposed to be a heavyweight, and we went in there, and despite making some slight alterations with formation and with pressing, we altered that a little bit. I think we can see that kind of thing happening this weekend. We still played our game. We still had chances. I could see a very similar thing happening against Liverpool. I don't think they're going to hack us as much as Chelsea did. I don't think they're going to be as physical. There's going to be an element of physicality because it's a derby, but I don't think it's going to be a systematic plan the way Chelsea's was. You know, that was obvious.
It could play into our hands because obviously you saw towards the end of the Cardiff game we brought Kurt Zouma on and rolled with the back three. That could come in handy against Liverpool, but you know, if you want to take the man marking approach with their front three. But just to touch on what Terry said earlier, incrementally, particularly from last season, I know we lost that one in the cup, but performances were better. If you look at the one at Goodison, we had a chance right at the end that we should have stuck in and won 1-0, but we didn't. And so, as I was saying, you know, it's incrementally getting better. And you know, if there ever was a time, now is the time. But I say, without a shadow of a doubt, this is their biggest game of the season, and without fail, no matter how much they play it down, they always turn up. They always, you know, they always rise to the occasion and put in a good performance against us. And I'm hoping this season we can take this same approach and not wet the bed, so to speak.
I'm actually getting excited. Sorry, guys, you guys are getting me more psyched with all this.
I don't know whether it's excitement or nerves.
I think it's both. Like, I'm good with both.
Definitely nerves. No. Just very quickly on that three at the back thing, we can't do that. We will be asking for trouble if we do that, because you play three at the back is high and wide, and they would love that. I understand the temptation, but I really hope we don't. Even mid-game, I wouldn't want us to do that, because you end up with five at the back then against their fullbacks as well.
If we've got something to defend, if we've got something to defend, which is unlikely, we'd be in that position. Say if we've got 20 minutes left and, you know, we're holding on to it.
That's when I could see us possibly doing it. But
yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely not something you're going to see, like, you know, from the beginning. I can't see Silva doing that.
No. From the off, I think that would be suicide. But no, as I say, obviously, yeah, it does come into the five back then, doesn't it? And with the defensive capabilities of Gomez and of Gay, fingers crossed that they can put a good shift in. But I don't want to get too ahead of myself. It's only Monday.
And Yerry Mina header to win the game, and then have them do some of those dance moves.
Oh, don't!
I'll die of happy.
Imagine.
All right. I, by the way, I love how this Cardiff reaction has been at least 10 minutes worth of Derby talk. Can't help it though. It's the week, you know? This is the way it works.
The emotional preparation.
Yeah. I feel like that's what people want to hear anyway. So anyway. Terry, your reactions have been absolutely priceless on this one. So I can't wait to start actually going into Derby talk later on this week. Yeah. I just want to do screenshots of Terry throughout the whole time. All right, well, I guess that's it for our Cardiff reaction, which was really just Liverpool prep as well. We are going to roll into a little segment here about our Icelandic wonder. Yeah, the Iceman, Gylfi Sigurdsson, has had been in really good form this season. And there's a number of reasons for that. I'm sure we'll get to those. Last season, he played 27 games, had 4 goals and 3 assists, and everybody was like, man, 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 you overpaid for him, man, man, man. Well, this season, 13 games in, he's had 6 goals and 2 assists, and he's just playing both ways, equally hard on defense as he is on the attack. It's been strong from Gylfi this season. So, Max, why don't we start with you, because, you know, it's your turn. What do you think is contributing to Sigurdsson's good form?
As you say, many things. But interestingly, for me, I've been asked to do an article on Sigurdsson that I'm going to try and get out in the next week or so. But it's almost as if it's the Sigurdsson that was at Swansea. Like, you know, he was very much a talisman for Swansea, and I think it's proven the same now. He's winning games for us now. He's like, you know, he's a match-deciding player. Obviously, he wasn't that as much last season, as you've said there. You pointed to the stats. It wasn't as much of a fruitful return, you can say. Obviously, the turnover in management, putting him out on the left, it obviously would do him no good. Shipping out the likes of Rooney, Klaassen, giving him the number 10 shirt, putting that responsibility on him, saying, you know, you're the playmaker now. You know, you're who we're going to look to turn defences into attacks and to take all the set pieces. And he's just absolutely marvellous to watch, isn't he? It's absolutely fantastic. Even when, as you say, that Cardiff game, it wasn't the prettiest of performances. And I think when I was having a little look at his stats, they weren't even that great. But as I say, he won us the match. He won us the match, and it was a big match too. Obviously, it's his old rival. Obviously, being an ex Swansea player, and you could argue, you could put that forward. That's a big game. Obviously, he scored against Swansea as well last season. Scored against Liverpool last season. Scored that absolutely fantastic game, fantastic goal that won us the game against Leicester. Put in a match-winning performance against Fulham. I don't know. It's weird because obviously you look at that. Outright, you'd say, is he our best player? And there's many others who have arguments to put forward as to being our best player. But if this rich vein of form continues, I think without a shadow of a doubt, he's got to be our best player.
All right, Terry, anything on that?
I mean, I just agree completely with Max. When you asked the question, what's different, was it? Did you say what's different this season compared to last? Pace. This season, he's got pace that he can feed and players with actual quality. You've got to remember, like, circumstances were not kind to Sigurdsson last year. He's come from Swansea. He came quite late in the window. We had no proper pre-season. So when he gets played straight away, he's having to come up to speed fitness-wise, playing in a team devoid of pace. So every time he'd get the ball, he was on the left and he's got to look for, he's got Klaassen and Rooney inside and Sandro, who had pace but couldn't stick to him. And he's looking at Cuco Martina at right back when Coleman wasn't playing. And as the season went on, he improved. He as his fitness caught up with him, he improved. But then as soon as he got up to full fitness and he had a little bit of pace around him, Yannick Bolasie came back into the team and Walcott came into the club. He was then playing for Sam Allardyce, which stunts any creative player, regardless of who's around him. So we've always had this player. We've always had this Gylfie Sigurdsson on our books, but just everything that was happening above his head didn't help him. So now this season, he's playing in a team where he's got actual pace and creativity and a manager who wants to play on the front foot. He's got all that around him and he's getting to show his stuff. And this was his last big move. Like his previous move to a big club didn't come off for him, and that was again circumstance, because Pochettino even come out and said that he would have liked to have kept him, but it was already decided he was going back to Swansea before he got there. So if his move here to Everton didn't come off, the prime of his career is just wasted, because he'd have probably bounced around here a year or two and then gone elsewhere, gone back down the league and been a star in a small pond there. But not needed. He's turning around now, and he's a star in his country. He's one of the top two or three best ever Icelandic players, and he knows now this is the time he's got to do it. He wants to do something here, you can tell. He wants to win a trophy and he wants to play in Europe and he wants to make his name now, because he won't get a bigger move after this. And I think we're seeing the benefits of a fully fit Gylfie Sigurdsson playing in his natural position with players around him that complement him.
I think it helps to have other players creating in the side with him. Pace is huge. But having those other players actually manufacturing chances, so it's not all on him. So somebody could maybe help create a chance for him. So it's not just him creating a chance for himself and for others and doing everything. I felt like everything was heaped on his shoulders last season. Like, everything. We expected him to get in the side and immediately to start providing all these assists and all these goals. Who else was creating last season? I can't think of the fact that Richarlison can create it, Rooney, you know, and that kind of stopped short after a certain bit, you know. Richarlison can create his own chances. Cenk Tosun combines well in terms of combination play. Bernard has actually created more chances this season than Sigurdsson has, and he hasn't even played as much, but he's created a lot of opportunities. Lookman is starting to get more time. He's creating chances, and it's this big it's weight off his shoulders, which allows him to be free, you know, frees him up to kind of play his game. And so he's one of the good players rather than the good player, you know. I think it helps to have the support in the center mid area with Gomez and Gay doing what they're doing. It's just a Gay mopping up absolutely everything and having pace. Then you look at Gomez, who glides around everywhere, also creating. I didn't even mention his name earlier. He's creating now. So it's just a much more – he's set up to succeed now rather than sink or swim last year. Right now, does it look like we overpaid for him?
Not at all.
No.
Got to say, well, there's a massive difference in playing on the left of midfield, trying to protect Cuco Martina, compared to playing in number 10 with Gomez and Garner behind you, allowing you to have time and space. I mean, didn't even mention Luca Dean. He's now got options like that. Mm-hmm. Out of him. I think you've hit the nail on the head there. Now he's one of the good players, and he's allowed to play his game rather than you are the good player. We need you to cover this outer position left back. We also need you to create all of our chances for players who can't get beyond their markers because they're too slow. The turnaround of Sigurdsson is the biggest indicator, I think, of how badly managed we were last season through all aspects of the club. He's a good barometer of what's improved, and just look at him now compared to last season at any point. Just varying managers, it's just like a different player. This is the player we bought, and same with we're probably going to think with Richarlison. Hopefully, yeah, we scoffed at the price at the time, but it ended up being actually, you know, value for money at least, if not a bargain.
I was going to say, from a defensive point of view, you mentioned Idrissa Gueye and Andre Gomes there, Jerry. Like, it's not as if he doesn't return the favour. He covers a hell of a lot of ground.
He does.
And there seems to be a real cohesion and understanding with not only the players behind him. And, you know, you see how the likes, how he links up with the likes of Luca Dean, but how he links up with the forward players too. Go back to the Brighton game and how he set up Richarlison first with, you know, that counter attack, and you know, he's like from our box to their box, linked up with Bernard, played the final ball into the path of Richarlison, and you know, it's a common occurrence now. He puts shifts like that in week out, and more often than not, because with him obviously churning in well with goals, he's put in front of a camera after the game, you know, being interviewed as the match winner, and he gives, you know, he speaks really well too. He's not arrogant. He's not getting carried away with, you know, his good form. He's firmly grounded, speaks on behalf of the club. As you said, he's one of the good players, and kind of alluding to, because obviously we've mentioned last season, it just seems to be, you know, the players are proud to play for us and want to play to the best of their capabilities, and it's really exciting, and it's a good time to not only be a supporter but to watch, because we're playing really good football now, and as proved, he's a cracking footballer in the right system.
Just quickly on that point you said about defensively, like, you're seeing all sides of his game now. I mean, you'd look at the game type of match he had against Fulham, where he was just an attacking, like, beast, and then you look at the Chelsea match where he was the first line of defence, and he was weirdly a defensive number 10. He was one of the best defensive performances throughout the whole team that day, by doing a job on Jorginho, which totally disrupted Chelsea, and Tottenham copied that to an extent as well. This weekend just gone, they must have studied the way we upset Chelsea's rhythm. So not only is he coming up with all these goals and assists, he's actually, you know, he's winning us games defensively as well, or getting us results at least.
Yeah, the idea of him not having to cover for shittiness, he can focus on combining with equal level players. You know, it's a relief to not have to sit there and cover for other people. The idea that other people are doing their jobs, you know, that's the Chelsea performance is the defensive performance I was thinking of. The idea where he was disciplined defensively, you know, fitting into that game plan. It's just, I give a lot of props to the manager on this, you know. So I've seen some arguments on Twitter that Sigurdsson's performances with Tosun up top are stronger. He tends to score. I think last game was his first game scoring when Tosun wasn't in. I think that's right. Do we think that matters? Is it a situation that maybe Sigurdsson doesn't score as many goals when Tosin's not in, but the rest of the team scores?
That's an interesting point, because the same point was raised about Richarlison too, wasn't it? How he kind of links in well with Tosin. But I think Tosin, I've reiterated the point several times, I think Tosin's a really good playmaking forward terms of holding the ball up and you know, linking up with players. I don't know. I wouldn't say it's a determining factor, because I think just everything's just kind of going his way. I think Terry listed the amount of things that weren't going his way last season, and now things just all seem to be pointing up, and confidence is there whether Tosin's in the side or not. You know, he's kind of that chief creator, and he's got a clear understanding of his role and knows what he has to do in there, and that approach may switch depending on who he's got in front of him as a centre forward, or whoever he's got to link up with out wide. But no, I feel like that takes the credit away from him somewhat. I just think he's been absolutely fantastic this season.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not an indictment of any of the other players. I just think all the attacking players benefit from having Tosin around. I mean, he's such a good foil of a striker. Like Max said, he's like a sort of playmaker striker. But not even in the sense of you know, the sort of little link-up play you can do, just having that orthodox number nine in, you know, against the opposition back four, it makes it easier for other attacking players because the opposition defence change the way they play to play against Tosin than they do from Richarlison. Mm. So he'll create more space for them. So I wouldn't be surprised if every, you know, Luckman, Walcott, Bernard, Sigurdsson, I wouldn't be surprised if they all benefited when Tosin's on the pitch, just because it's the same with a lot of clubs. If you can, especially when he comes off the bench, if you're playing against the defence that's been playing against Richarlison all game and playing one way, then to suddenly switch it up and be tired as well, then you're going to find yourself with more space. And the more space Sigurdsson has, the better he is, because obviously we know what kind of, you know, strikes he can hit from distance, and, you know, he's got more time and, you know, to look and see, you know, pick the right pass. So it's just one of those things. Some players are like that. They bring the best out of others, even if they're not scoring themselves. And I think Tosin is one of those players.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see December how we're varying things up when it comes to those combinations. I was happy to see Tosin get in because I do think he gives us a different look, a different style. Lately, he's been bringing in Calvert-Lewin for Richarlison because he's. I think I've heard a lot of people say that Silva's system works best with a speedy number nine. Yeah, I'm anxious to see how that shakes out. Last question: do we need to sign a backup for Sigurdsson moving forward? Because right now, let's say Sigurdsson can't play. Who steps in for him? How are we? Is it a Bernard situation? Is it a Kieran Dowell situation? Or is it something where we? Is it a Tom Davies situation? How do we roll on that? Because I don't really know. Because I feel like Bernard's getting really comfortable playing on that wing. You know.
Yeah. I think for the sake of. For quality and numbers, you'd like to see a player brought in.
Mm-hmm.
I bring the case forward. I'd love to see Tom Davies play in that number 10 role. I think that would benefit his career a lot if he was just given, you know, obviously with January coming up, I'd love to see it go ahead against some of the lesser teams in the league. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to see us bring in another number 10, but I can't see them unseating Guilfi anytime soon, particularly with his confidence at the minute.
We do definitely need someone. It's difficult, though, because a lot of clubs will have this problem with all their top players. Like, how do they sign someone for a position where the player who's coming knows there's an established top player in that position that they're not going to unseat straight away? I mean, we have got a player who could play there, but he's not at the club. It's Nikola Vlasic,
yeah.
And we've covered that in other videos. But... No, I agree with Max entirely. I would like to see if Sigurdsson, touch wood, was to, you know, come out the team, get injured, whatever, or just be rested in the Christmas fixtures coming up at some point to keep him fresh. I'd like to see Tom Davies in that position, not because he's going to play the same game that Guilfi Sigurdsson does, because he's not, but I'm not a big believer in the in switching your formation around to accommodate one injury. I think as if you were able to do a like-for-like swap, even if there's a bit of a drop-off in quality, I think that is more beneficial to the team. Obviously, anyone comes out at this point, they're going to try and get Luckman in because he's playing so well, but I just wouldn't want to be taking Bernard off that side where he's establishing himself. He's still learning the league, remember? He's still learning the rest of his teammates. You don't want to be going, right, well, you're playing number 10 for a couple of games, then you're going to go back out. But there's loads of options. I mean, you could do that and put Tosin in instead and then put Richarlison back on the left for a bit. But I think for the shape of the team and for the style of the team, I think giving Tom Davies that advanced role, almost like he did with Koeman when he first broke through. He was in with Sigurdsson, Schneiderlin, and Garner Gay. He was sort of like, of that middle three, he was the one who had the licence to get forward, not so much an off-the-striker number 10, but... you know, arrive from deep kinds of striker who can, you know, sort of, you know, turn up in different parts of the pitch, go beyond the striker and, you know, help where you need it. And I think Tom Davies would actually play better there than further back where he has been playing.
I also think he's more well-equipped to handle the defensive responsibilities of that position. In Silva's system, we've seen how much defense, we talked about this video, how much defense Sigurdsson has to actually help with. Mm. And I think Tom Davis is the only one of the names we mentioned that could handle that. Don't think Bernard could handle it. And Kieran Dowell, while I think he can handle the attacking responsibilities, I worry about the wear and tear on his body, you know, going back and forth. I don't know if he can handle all the defense that he would have to be actually performing. Having said that, I do think we're probably going to need someone to come in and be able to – we're going to need more depth at that position.
Makes you laugh, doesn't it, considering how many of them we brought in last summer? Was he looking at the market for more number 10s
again? I wish Vlahovic would have been fine with not starting every game, because that's why he's gone. It's the only reason. I think Silva would have been fine with him staying. I think he would have been our backup there. And he just wants minutes right now. After last season, I can't blame him.
Mm.
But I don't know if – I think that may – to me, that shows me a player who doesn't really want to play for us. That's a player who just wants to play. I can't even see him coming back next season, really.
Yeah, I'd be surprised as well, but you never know. But I think, honestly, Tom Davis could surprise people. Mm. Like, it's been such a long time when he's been played in a sort of attacking position. People forget he actually is a good player. Like, he's not going to be Gylfi Sigurdsson. I don't think anyone in the squad's got that in the locker at the minute. But I think he could surprise people if he played that high up the pitch, because he's actually a good attacking player.
Yeah, and he's got the ability to draw fouls, which I think if you're playing in that number 10 role. But to be honest, I think it's just a given in this Everton side anyway. You're going to have players hot on your heels. But it seemed like a particular skill of Tom Davies, you know, with his back to goal, to draw fouls.
He uses his body really smart, and he knows when to feel that contact, when to go down.
You add that, you know, you're going to be absolved of a bit more defensive responsibility if you put further up the pitch. One thing I've pointed out about Tom Davies is when he is playing one of the protecting roles a bit deeper, he's often caught out on the counter-attack for not having enough pace to keep up.
True.
You absolve him of that responsibility as much, and you might see a much better side of his game.
I think that all makes sense. That would be my choice. I agree with you guys. All right. Anything else on Sigurdsson here?
Keep it up,
please.
Do. Yeah.
Stay healthy, please. I guess that's it for our Sigurdsson's Good Form segment. Long may it continue. We're gently delving into the transfer rumors on this segment. Just a slow trickle into it, because as we know, come January, all bets are off, hell breaks loose, and we get connected with every single center back and every single everything. Every agent name drops us because we're the hot young team, you know. So I'm fine with it, whatever. Just means a lot of reading, trying to siphon through what's the shit and what's the wheat from the chaff, if you will. Two new ones. First one, let's start with Gabriel Barbosa. You may know him as Gabigol. He's got goal in his name. Just saying. He's an Inter Milan player, but he's currently on loan with Santos in Brazil, where he's got 18 goals this season. I think he led the league in scoring. He's an interesting player when you watch him. He doesn't seem like super speedy. Doesn't seem like he's got a lot of pace. But he's a really clinical finisher, very intelligent, plays more of a second striker role rather than the lead striker. Like, I don't know how he would play that lead striker role in England, where it's even more physical. Mm. Just had a nightmare situation at Inter. He's 22 years old. I didn't realize he was this young. Are you kidding? He's a young guy. And he could cost potentially less than 20 million. And that could end up happening in January. As I've heard, he is probably off to another club in January. So, what do we think of Gabigol, and how in the world? Because when you watch tape of him, it's interesting. He wears the number 10 on his back. But you often don't see him being that lead guy in his highlights. He seems like he's a little further back.
Yeah, he comes across as a second striker to me.
He is.
It seems like we've got this real South American fever about us at the minute. We're going, and the template seems to be they've got to be young with a lot of promise. Obviously, with Gabigol, it's an interesting kind of case study because obviously signed from Santos to Inter, and I didn't see a whole lot of him at Santos. Obviously, you see highlights, and I was really expecting them to blow up at Inter and become this, you know, this emerging presence and a great centre forward. But it didn't work out for him. And Inter did have a great season last season under Spalletti, getting the Champions League, and he just seemed to be a bit of a cast out. Obviously, went on loan at Benfica, back at Santos, back at the club from where, which is always quite an interesting one for me because that may just kind of be his home, if you know what I mean. But I think when it comes to these transfer discussions, my reaction instinctually will be: if you get the okay from Brands and Silva, you get an okay from me. You know, they seem to have this template of player that fits into the Everton project, and so far so good. So if they are interested, I'm interested too.
It's such a boring way to think, but it's such a comfortable thing. You know what I mean? You know what? I trust those guys.
It's foolproofing your own thoughts, really. You know, you just kind of think, what would Marcel do?
WWMD. That's.
But I don't know. I don't obviously know enough about him to see if he hit the ground running, if he come to Everton. I don't know.
Now, we are clearly not experts on the two players we're discussing today, but done a little research, you know, and at least get the ball rolling on the conversation about them. Obviously, if these links continue, they will get stronger. We will continue to learn more about them. Think about how they'll fit in. What he seems like is a player that we don't have a lot of. You know, the idea of a second striker giving us a different look. That's, I don't know. And also one who's clinical in front of the goal, doesn't really seem like a bag of nerves. However, one of the things that some people have said is, if he gets his head on straight. Whenever I hear that kind of phrase, I get a little worried, you know? Makes me worry that maybe there's an attitude problem of some sort. But again, Silva and Brands, if it's an attitude problem, they're not going to bring him. They brought in, like, good people. So what do you think, Terry, about possibly bringing in a second striker Brazilian who's banged in 18 goals but not necessarily known for his pace?
I don't believe it. It smells an awful lot like an agent putting the link out there because his player needs a club soon. So there's his loan at Santos. Does that finish in January?
What I've seen is that I believe it does. Okay, I believe that season in Brazil ends. They said that he's going to end up, the article I read is that he's going to end up the leading scorer in Brazil. So I believe that's right. Did not do it. But what the articles that I've read said that he's almost certainly off to a new club in January. This was more than one.
Bound to be, really. Not getting in ahead of Mauro Icardi or Ettore Martinez.
No.
He does fit the profile of players we've bought recently under this current regime because, you know, I look at the type of business we did with Barcelona, like Yerry Mina, like players who've come into a big European club and the club are going to very quickly decide to move them on because they haven't got the time or the patience for them to settle. Whereas we've come in and said, yeah, we've got a home for you here. We think we can use you. And like Mina's the best example of that. And Gabigol would be, or Gary Goals, whatever his name is. he would, on paper, he would fit that sort of mould. And I can see why, if it is an agent's rumour, why he's chosen Everton as the club to, you know, to link him with, to generate some interest in his player. I don't think, personally, there's going to be anything in this. I think it's all silly season type stuff. We don't play with a second striker. We don't. We play with a number 10 and a number 9. And I just don't... Where does he play in the team? Even if there's... Say Sigurdsson and Richarlison get injured or get suspended for a game each at the same game, where does he play? He can't play number 10 because he's a second striker and we're not set up to have that. And he won't play number 9. So, I mean, maybe it's a legit link because, again, the profile's right for that. And South America, you know, Brands has got a big presence there. He looks into the South American market. He finds players there. I don't know, though. I just think it doesn't seem like it's a bit of a square peg into a round hole if he comes here on the face of it. You never know. And I'll back, as Max and yourself said, Jerry, I'll back Brands and Silver all the way until such a time where they prove they're not to be backed. But they were a long, long way from that at the minute. So every move they've made has been a good one. So if he comes, they've got a plan for him. But I don't think, I can't see it being a legitimate link.
Something I did notice is he's been also linked with West Ham. And that is a common thing when it comes to agents name dropping in the press. You see us connected with a lot of the same players West Ham is. You know? I'm trying to envision a scenario in a game when you put him in. If we need goals, possibly taking out one of our center mids, rolling with him, you know, I could see that happening if we need a goal late, but could you really see us starting a game like that? You know, and I feel like he would want to play more, you know, and not just come in the last 25 minutes of games, you know? And
yeah,
I don't know. It's a strange scenario, but he's a talented kid. We'd have to be patient with him. It's just, I am more skeptical of the Gabigol connection. The fact that we have these new Brazilians on our team, though, kind of, for me, makes it a little more real just because it's like they're getting the band together. You know what I mean? We're getting them back together, man. So it's like these fringe Brazilian players who actually can play and who have needed opportunities. So I am vexed. I lend more credence to the next rumor from Lyon, Tanguy Ndombele. I remember last season when I was doing the opposition view with the kind man from Lyon, who I can't, of course, I can't remember his name, but he was he said, "Look out for this kid. This kid can play. We just brought him on." And he is a quality player. They got him for $8 million, I think. I think they had a loan with an option to buy, and they took the option to buy. He's currently valued around $40 million now. If that tells you how well he's done, he's a center mid. I think he occasionally drops into defensive mid, more of a center mid player. I believe he'd be competing with Andre Gomez for minutes. Obviously, he's 21 years old, so he's younger. Creative, he's very good with the ball, energetic, he's got pace, he puts an imprint on games when he's in there. This would give us, I don't know if this would be an instead of Andre Gomez or in addition to coming up in, you know, whenever we would try to make this purchase. But apparently we sent our chief scout out there. This story was just in the Liverpool Echo, I think, today. And as we know, sometimes lately the club has been feeding little bits of information to the Echo. Whenever it comes out first in the Echo, I think maybe there's some credence to it. Yeah, again, he's a hell of a player, guys. I think we have a little bit of an issue making sure there's enough playing time to go around for these good players. But it's what having a squad is like.
Yeah, he made his his international debut for France not too long ago as well, didn't he?
I think you're right.
So that, you know, that bodes well for us, and it speaks levels of the quality of player that we're aiming for these days. It's funny because I obviously you mentioned that the first time it came out was through the Liverpool Echo, but I didn't read the article when it came out. When I was being told the segments, I just heard the kid from Lyon. I was thinking, you know, straight away, who's that? I thought initially it was the lad who scored against us.
Who are Traore? Who is it?
I don't know how to pronounce his name. I think
Awa. Yeah, he's a good player.
So whenever I've watched him, he seemed like a really talented player. But I wouldn't be averse to this at all. Of course, you've got to question whether it's legitimate. For God's sake, it's November. But I wouldn't be against it at all. He played when Lyon beat City not too long ago at the Etihad, and looked to have a real imprint on that game. So, you know, it bodes well and says that he could perform in the Premier League. Whether he'd leave Lyon at the minute, I doubt it. They're playing really well. I think the second in the French League at the minute, obviously achieving European football consistently. I know we're on the up at the minute, but I think they're just, you know, a peg ahead of us in terms of where you'd want to be.
Supposedly, Yerry Mina chose us over Lyon, though.
Yeah, that, to be honest, that was the first thing I thought when I saw the link today. I saw the article, really good, really good source, Phil Kirkbride. So you know it's legitimate. It more or less come from the club directly. But I think that it's the equivalent of someone linking Bernard with playing somewhere who get sold in January. It's like, why would
he just
he be there. Bought? Yeah, why would he be bought by Lyon? And it's not like he's been bought by Lyon and hasn't kicked a ball, and he's like, oh, this is not what I expected. He's playing for them, playing in the Champions League, playing really well. He's, you know, towards the top ends of the French leagues. Like, it doesn't, you know, why would he come here? Because as good as we are at the minute, we're not better than Lyon, the way they're playing. They're playing in the Champions League. They, you know, they're competing at the top of their division. With my conspiracy theorist hat on, I wonder if we are actually negotiating for a different player in that position, and we have put this story out via well-connected media at the club to sort of spook another player into, you know, talking to us and, you know, coming to a agreement with us, because this just seems like on a lot of different levels, a really bizarre link, because he is playing in a team that's in bigger competitions than we are, and he's just got there. So it just makes no sense to me. It just makes no sense, unless it is a tactic. We know that these things go on. We know that clubs put, you know, stories out. Barcelona did it a lot in the summer over Mina. They put like stories out in the press, so we might be going, I don't know whether the Man United link was fabricated from Barca the whole time. And no, there was even a link for Paul Pogba, Barcelona are going to give 50 million plus Gomez and Mina. So they nearly got our two of our players, but I don't even think that was legitimate. I think it's just a little bit of gamesmanship from Everton in this case to try and push another player we may be speaking to into either lowering his demand or, you know, being direct with us. He could be great for us. It could be legitimate. We could be trying to sign him, and he could come in and he could be great. But it smells suspicious to me.
Well, point out that the article did say we sent our chief scout, inferring that we specifically are going there to run the rule over the player a little more closely. I don't know that that infers any kind of negotiation or anything like that. I mean, heck, we send scouts to Portugal, and they update those reports all the time saying what games we're at, you know, every weekend. I see it as a player that we're interested in. I don't know if the player's interested in us. And Terry, great point about the putting the pressure on to another player. That is entirely, but it's a game. It's a, this, this marketing, this or the this press game that that football clubs play is not something they do in America. This was a totally new experience for me, the way transfer windows work in Europe. It is mind-blowing, and I'm totally addicted to it. I think it's a fascinating. It's so cool.
Who is legitimately going to try and sign a player and is at the scouting stage and then informs club-connected journalists? Like, yeah, we're actually watching this player. So if anyone wants to come in and gazump us, that's the one we're looking at.
Put it that way, Terry. How could we argue with you? That makes putting it in those exact words. I'm just like, well, I'm a fool for thinking this was real. I think that's like super logical. Unless, so it's either one of two things. It's what you said, or it's more advanced than it's being portrayed.
Yeah, possibly.
You know?
But even then, I think the source contradicts that. If that comes out in random national press or online, then that's leaked. It's come from the Liverpool Echo, Phil Kirkbride. That is stuff that's off by the club, I think. So I don't believe it. I think no club in the right mind would tell closely linked media, yeah, we're scouting this player. It doesn't happen. I think we're looking to smoke another player out. So, and I hope whoever that is a good addition, and we'll do a video on him when it comes to light.
So yet again, Terry smothers the positivity in the room. We'll just call him the realist. All right. So I guess that's it for our probable fantasies for Gabigol and Ndombele. It could have been great. Just saying.
Sorry.
Terry just... I love it. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it is time for If You Know Your History, the Everton-style quiz show that pits Terry against Max in a cage match of Everton wits and might. Today's quiz is going to be penalty shootout style, where we will flip a memory card, because I don't believe in coins, except for digital coins. Yeah, crypto. Yeah, that's good. Anyway, we can't flip one of those, so I've got a memory card instead, all right? And we'll be seeing who gets to go first. Whoever wants to go first, they will get the first question, and the other person will have a chance to block, and then we'll reverse for the next one, and then we'll go back for the next one, and then we'll go back for the next one. We'll play best of four. If it's tied at best of four, then we'll go to a tiebreaker. Let's hope we don't screw up this quiz like we did last one, where we accidentally had Terry go twice in a row, and really, technically, according to the numbers, should have tied last week. Should have been a draw. Yeah. So there's that. So next time it comes up, Max, we just got to throw it to Terry if it's in doubt, all right? Because he got shafted last time. All right. So, Terry, you called last time. And so, Max, your turn.
Tails.
Do I even need to ask you?
Tails.
Tails, of course. It is heads, ladies and gentlemen. Oh. Heads. That is the head of the memory card. So, Terry, when would you like to go, first or second? Would you like to shoot or block first?
I'll shoot first. I'll go first.
All right. That does tend to be the way. Max, which end do you want to defend?
Glad to shoot.
I knew it. That's what you do. All right. So, if we could start intense quiz music, please. And there it is. It always takes a little while for it to ramp up. Terry, your shot. Yakubu, the Yak, played 100 times overall for Everton, but how many goals did he score?
I'm going to go with 42.
Ah. Terry has guessed 42. Max.
So I think, remember that injury? I think he'd done his Achilles against Tottenham, and that just kind of messed him up, and he didn't score as much from then onwards. I'm going to go for 38.
38 is Max's guess. The Yak scored 33 goals for Everton, meaning that Max has blocked this one. Okay, nice save, Max. Yeah, good work. Great instincts. Now, Max's question. Leighton Baines. I'm sure you've heard of him. He is one of the Premier League's top 10 penalty scorers in history. But how many has he scored?
Oh, that's a bad one. Then I could tell you how many he's missed. He's missed one against Chelsea in the League Cup, one against Man United in the league. But oh, I couldn't tell you how many he scored.
Max, you're doing a phenomenal job of answering the questions I have not asked.
Oh, sorry. I don't know. 24.
Okay, Max has guessed 24. Question mark. He's asked it. Is that correct? We shall see. Terry.
I'm going to do similar to Max in the last question and go 20.
20.
I feel like it's lower.
I feel like it's not. I feel like it's 20. And Terry got that on the nose.
Oof.
By doing the Price is Right thing where you guess just a little less. Same thing Max did. These guys are playing the strategy, folks. They're playing the system. That is a block for Terry. Okay. Terry looked like a cat reaching out there for that. It's amazing. The reach on this guy. All right, Terry's question. What minute did Kevin Campbell score in Everton's 1-0 win, their last win at Anfield, on the 27th of September 1999?
I have no idea, so I'm going to go with 77 minutes.
The 77th minute is what Terry says. Max.
I was one. I haven't got an idea either. I'm going to say it was in the first half goal. 37 minutes.
37th minute. See, Max, you're the type of kid, though, who was probably watching at age one. Folks sat you up. And you were sitting there, and you've managed to log the information in your brain. You know?
Have I?
The idea... Well, you got the half right. All right? So, this is a block for Max. Kevin Campbell evidently scored in the fourth minute.
Fourth minute? About early?
Fourth? Really?
Evidently, that's a thing.
Oh, bad for Liverpool.
That's a block for Max. Max, you know, guesses correctly on Terry's little panenka. Didn't quite come off. So, Max, here is your chance. Jack Rodwell left Everton for Manchester City in 2012. But how many appearances did he make overall for Everton?
Awful question.
John, Quizmaster John, I hope you heard that.
I was hoping it would be like, how much did he go for? When did he sign? How many seasons did he have? I'm going to say he had like 3 strong seasons in the first team. I don't know. 50.
Max says 50. Terry. Bill Terry block.
55.
Terry plays the system. And it's successful because Jack Rodwell made 112 appearances.
Yes. I doubted myself as soon as I said 50, because he had a good few years, didn't he? And he was in there. He was one of Moyes' darlings. So
right now, gentlemen, no one's made a shot.
Good keep.
This is keeper palooza, all right? This strategy thing, strategery, is paying off for both of you. But this is the tiebreaker question. I'm going to reflip. Terry, your turn to call it. Heads or tails?
Tails.
Oh. Tails for Terry. It is tails.
Oh.
You want first or second, Terry?
Second.
Oh, he wants second. Tides are changing here on If You Know Your History. Just saying. The world's changing. So, Max, how old is Jack Rodwell?
Oh, 28.
Max has said 28. Terry, how old is Jack Rodwell? Tiebreaker question. No pressure.
I'm going to do me shithouse tactic again and go 27. I feel like he's younger than that.
That's going to be a matter of days, isn't it?
Yeah, probably. I feel like he's younger than that. He's been around since he was very young. Remember, he broke through as a kid. So I'm going to go with that.
The shithouse tactic, ladies and gentlemen, as it so recently has been the case, has succeeded for Terry here. Jack Rodwell is 27 years old.
Yes!
Going second has been a godsend for everyone. John, Quizmaster John, just be aware, these guys are working the system. I'm just saying, all right? This actually helped Terry get it on the nose. Terry, congratulations, sir. You, in a bit of, I guess, karma, it comes back to you from the slip up for us accidentally not giving you enough credit last week. The universe shines kindly on Terry. So Terry, you have a choice. Your spoils of war, spoils of victory. Pick the tune that we close out with.
I'm gonna have a quick look at my Spotify and see what I've been listening to.
Terry scrolls past Baby Shark, Baby Shark, Baby Shark.
On repeat.
Oh, they played that right before my wife's 5K last week. And I was like, oh no, she's going to have that in her head the whole time. But you know what she had in her head the whole time? Grand Old Team. She had Grand Old Team in her head the whole 5K. What am I doing to my family, guys? What am I doing?
I'm going to go with another... I do like other music than this type, but I think this is my thing for whenever I win. I'm going to go with another dad rock type song, and I'm going to go with Sharp Dressed Man by ZZ Top.
I know this one. I know this one well. Sharp Dressed Man by ZZ Top.
It's a good song. It's an absolute tune. Don't ever get ready to go out for a night out listening to that. Because you will go out thinking you are someone you are not.
You will slay in your mind. Maybe not in reality, but in your mind, you will be an unstoppable force. It's
you will think you are Marcel Brands when you are actually Sam Allardyce.
So Terry, to stay on the topic of ZZ Top, my wife and I have been having this discussion recently about bands like ZZ Top and AC/DC. Do you know any women that like those bands?
Not a single one.
Not a one. Not a one. And I'm sure there's some ladies who like AC/DC, you know. I don't know any ladies who like ZZ Top. I know none. Now granted, it's now, but it really is. I think dad rock is a good way to describe that. Yeah. It is. It's very, you know, put on your you know, make sure your hair is styled just perfectly, you're shaving. Yeah.
Do you know what is funny that you say those two bands? Because I was looking at my Spotify and I was conflicted between Sharp Dressed Man by ZZ Top and Shoot to Thrill by AC/DC. It's a bit of an A, but that one's the Iron Man 2 song. That's cool as well. But I thought, you know what, I think I'll go for ZZ Top because I just need to be as uncool as possible. It's cool but uncool at the same time. Max picks like proper good, like, you know, he picks like Park Life and he picks Kanye West, and I'm like, yeah, Kiss, ZZ Top. What else do the young podcast listeners not listen to?
All right, so as we're closing out to some ZZ Top, one that I've actually liked for a long time, Not one that finds its way onto my Spotify or onto my, well, anything. But when it's on the radio, when I rarely listen to the radio, if it's on, I leave it. I do. I'm as guilty as the next guy of feeling like it makes me feel cool. So, as we close out to that, it's the end of the really big show. Thanks so much for listening to the Toffee Blues podcast. Please subscribe to us. Be one of our flock, our peeps, you know? Why not? That way it'll show up on your feed, and you'll know when we drop a new one. So check that out. Also, please subscribe to the Toffee Blues YouTube channel. If you feel like actually looking at our faces, you know, it's an acquired taste, but you know, hey, maybe it's something you'll enjoy. If you like that, then check us out there. Subscribe to us there. That'd be rocking, and we appreciate it. If you want some big old globs of Terry in text format, check him out on the Liverpool Echo Fan Jury. He'll show up there every once in a while. His Twitter will tell you all about it. Max also does a good job of updating his Twitter about, you know, how he shows up all over the world in podcasts and videos. Yeah, and Max might well show up this coming week on Premier League Productions. You know, doing a little preview of the Derby. He had to go to Anfield, hold his nose the whole time. Fantastic.
I've had the cold ever since.
Yeah. And you know what? Just to plug myself, there's a chance I might show up on NBC Sports coming up this week with me and my son asking Bernard questions. So yeah, it's a weird time for the guys. All right? Good things, though. Good things. If you want more Toffee Blues stuff, you can hear about all these appearances and everything. Follow the Toffee Blues on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Instagram just hit 10K followers. It's been pretty cool. We've been able to add a story, and it's been helping people are getting access to our videos a lot easier now, which is awesome. Also, check out the Toffee Blues website. I feel like a new version of the website is going to be dropping any day now, so look forward to that. I think that's it, guys. No more plugging. I'm unplugging now. That's it, guys. Terry, thanks so much, man. It's good to talk to you, as always.
Thanks, guys. Pleasure, as always.
Max, you as well, man.
Been a pleasure. See you next time.
People don't realize we sit here and we talk, like, all the time in between these segments, so it's always so heartbreaking to finish because it's just so easy to talk to these nice guys. So I'll sign off now. Let's finish up Sharp Dressed Man. So, bye.